time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the beautiful studios of beautiful Phoenix, freedomsphoenix.com, freedomsofthenestphoenix.com in Phoenix, Arizona, and it's nice out. You know, I think I might go out to the lake this afternoon and say hello to my wife and some friends. But first, we want to share some things with you. Now, this week, it's our first week. We want to make sure that you get to know who we are. And then we'll start bringing in some guests next week, you know, that tell us what's going on. And we want to know who you are. Who are you? Are you doing something? Are you an activist? Or are you a slacktivist? Well, that's how the young guys here see it. They're like, yeah, slacktivist. So they're talking, well, what's his story? Well, he's for this and that and everything, talks about and does, you know, but what does he do? What have they done? Well, he's slacktivist, because it's really that simple. You know, the situation is they are engaged because, man, the man is engaged with them. So they got to get active. Well, we're going to have you meet some of them. Now, we have one gentleman we're going to bring on in the next segment. His name is Jack Gregson. Now, he's, you know, our age. He's, you know, late 40s, early 50s, around there. You know, he's got half a century on him that he's been around a few times. You see this stuff happen. And I myself, now, think about it. You know, I'm 48, but I graduated in 79. You know, my kids, they come up and they say, Dad, you don't understand. I'm like, seriously? I had to go to Google and start pulling up headlines. What was going on in the late 70s? You know, all of a sudden we have inflation was through the roof. Interest rates were 23%. I think that was from the Fed. You know, I mean, it was just enormous what Volcker did there. But, you know, it had to be done at the time. And you can look forward to it coming, too, man. You're going to, if there is a Fed or we even have a dollar, interest rates are going to go through the roof. They don't have a choice, but we'll see what happens. Then you had the recession. It was real bad. You had the Rust Belt. You have manufacturing closing down and going overseas. You had Afghanistan. That's right. You know, Afghanistan, Russians. That's why they're saying, yeah, you need to have our bases in Russia so you can stage to go in. You go right on ahead. Yeah, we support that. That's a good IND. You guys go ahead and do that. You know, how's that going to work out for you? So what happens is, it's kind of the same thing. Remember Iran hostage crisis was going on? That's what made Ted Koppel. That's where Nightline came from. You know, it was day 378 of the Iran hostage crisis. You know, remember? And Carter's in, you know, the White House, just, you know, that's top of his plate the whole time. And this kind of atmosphere, and they brought up selective service again. You had to, you know, register for the draft. Well, we're not going to draft you, but you got to register. We need to know where you is. So what happened is, I'm trying to show these guys this. I'm saying, look, this sound familiar? Gas prices shot up. I had a 65 Chevelle Supersport. Man, don't think I didn't know when gas, you know, my speedometer went up as my gas gauge went down. And don't think I wasn't noticing when gas hit a dollar. I'm junior year in high school. I was like 78, early 79. I remember a teacher going, gasoline was, I don't know, 50 cents, 70 cents. It's going to be over a dollar before you guys get out this year. And we're going, ah, ha, 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 and it was. And we're like, wow, that's back when we made, you know, $4 an hour. So, I want to make sure you guys, there is a similarities, and some of us that have been around have noticed it. And we want to make sure that we share with you the same perspective that you have right now, but we have some experience. And we're going to help these young guys, and you'll meet them here in just a little bit on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. We'll be back in just a little bit.
There are are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Haas Show.
Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day, 11 to a.m. to 1 p.m. here on RBN Network and from Freedom's Phoenix Studios here in beautiful Phoenix. And as we all know, it's hot, but we like it. It's a dry heat, and I didn't really appreciate that till I was back in Iowa last summer, and dang, I'd much rather be here 115 than there at 95 and that humidity. So, you know, sucks to be y'all, man. You need to move to Arizona and help us make us more free here. You know, we got our own challenges. I'm telling you. Oh, as much as we have, you know, of us, you know, being active and everything, everybody knows that they're full of it, you know, but, you know, per capita, we have a larger deficit here in Arizona than California. I mean, as they're, you know, slipping beneath the waves, Arizona's right behind them. And we just make fun of them. I mean, you know, we had yesterday, and I think at the bottom of Freedom's Phoenix today, Freedom's with an S, Phoenix.com, we had a story of, you know, all the spending and stuff they're doing again. They're not slashing government enough. Now, and they're not going to. What do they want to do? They want to raise your taxes some more. We had another story. It's, excuse me, we'll get that cough button in this week. I know you're tired of that. And what happens is that you look at New York, they're up the higher end. They're a 50-something percent tax rate. I want to not live here, especially since I don't have a job anymore with my banking buddies. So, you know, and that's one thing that we're going to talk about. One of our editors on Freedom's Phoenix is a gentleman named Jack Gregson. Jack has, you know, a personal history that gave him the motivation to do some research on this, and his contribution to the movement has been to make sure everybody knows what's what and in real time what's happening. And we've had we have a lot of resources to come. He's really added a lot to Freedom's Phoenix by making sure we know some information that we need to know from his perspective as an individual, that his family has suffered from this cycle, the boom and bust, and define how it happens. And I think we want to bring Jack in. Jack, I got you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Now, Jack lives in Ahwatukee, which is a area southeast of Phoenix proper. It's just, you know, past the airport on your way to Tucson down there. And it's a nice community there. He's been there for years. And I wanted to have Jack tell you his story so you can understand, you know, where this revolution is coming from and the perspective that we have that are working hard in making sure that ourselves and our family are protected. I mean, you should feel fortunate that Jack's willing to share his research and information with you, but he's not doing it for you. He's doing it for him. So tell us, give us a little bit of your history, Jack, and tell us what's motivated you to do what you do.
Okay. My great-great-grandmother, Eliza Marshall, was from a very wealthy family, and unfortunately, her father gambled away their cotton mill in England, and she became a debt slave along with her sisters, and this was back in the 1830s. They worked 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. They were fed what they called brimstone and treacle, which is sulfur and molasses, and it's kind of a thin gruel, and that's what they subsisted on, and they were able to get out of England aboard a ship illegally because they were sold into slavery. They came eventually to California in 1845 along with their husband, James Gregson. They bought approximately 500 acres north of San Francisco in 1850. They were part of the gold rush and the founding of San Francisco. And they were doing well. And then they passed away, and the land went to their inheritors, which was John Gregson. John Gregson held it until about 1930. And the depression.
Oh, hold on a second. We don't. They're not hearing you on this. Are we getting? He's going into the mix, going out. So we're not getting anything through the network of him. No. Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, this is. You know, Jack. You know, if you can you know, we're going to have Jack come back then. We're still working out the bugs here on the phone. We'll go ahead and play with this during the break and see what we can do. Jack, go ahead and hold on, and we'll see if we can get you into the feed on this.
Sure.
Ah, God, that's so sad because it's such a great story for you guys. What we're going to do is we'll get him back. And we got in studio some of the guys. We'll go ahead and have, you know, we'll meet them, and we'll see if during the break we can go ahead and get Jack fixed. But dang it, that's so bad because it's such a great story. You know what? Something for you guys to look forward to. I'll tell you, here's what he was talking about is he has a his great-grandmother in the early 1800s was a of a wealthy family where the patriarch had gambled away a I think it was a cotton mill or something. It was a, you know, some business, and they became debt slaves working 16 hours a day, you know, stowed on a ship come over here to America and finally made it to California where they bought hundreds of acres of land. And once they started to build their fortunes, then, you know, things started happening. You know, government started getting involved. And there's just a track record of this that, you know, he has been motivated and seen the cycle through his family history that he goes, this is the kind of things that you can expect and where all this wealth was accumulated by the productive, and then it gets bled off to somewhere. So he's knowing from a perspective what to look for. And we'll go ahead. And Jack? Jack, go ahead. What we'll go ahead and do is have him call in to the studio directly and the network. We'll go ahead and get that taken care of for you because I do want to get Jack in. And I apologize for the dead air there. But, you know, what we're going to do today is make sure you start to physically get to meet some of the people involved in this revolution. You've heard me talk about them. You've heard me give you examples of what their motivations are and how they're able to contribute to this awakening of people, the revolution between the ears. Because I remember hearing, talking to various people who had done a lot of research, and then you go and you read specific things and so on. And there was one book that really caught my eye that somebody gave me, and I don't really have a lot of time to read. But this one, once I started, I just couldn't put it down. And it was the biography of Paul Revere. Paul Revere had kind of a similar story where his father, excuse me, his father was, I don't know, it's kind of like, I don't know if it's slavery, but you know, you have these large families in Italy or something or France and such, and there's an opportunity to go be an apprentice somewhere in the empire or some other place. They're going to teach you a trade. You know, you got one too many kids, you know, or you want them to go put a foothold in a new country and you expand your family. Well, Paul Revere's father got sent to America in Boston, Massachusetts there and worked under a goldsmith. And he became successful, I guess, and was able to pass that down to Paul. Well, Paul Revere then became a silversmith and such, and he did a lot, like the Boston Massacre. That was an etching that he did, and they just mass-produced them, you know, sent out as their kind of their propaganda piece. He was the man that was, you know, responsible for that. Now, Paul Revere, excuse me. Paul Revere also was very instrumental in kind of, you know, just being a touchstone between a lot of people, you know, and the story that he had was passed on to his grandchildren that wrote this book and then a lot of his writings and such. And I found it fascinating from this standpoint. Every single one of the characters, Sam Adams, John Adams, Hancock, Jefferson, all these guys, you could see which one of those had the character traits of someone you already know in the movement. Oh, this guy is that guy. This guy is that guy. Oh, I know the traits of this guy and what he's saying and writing and how he's acting and the disposition that he had and the attitude towards this authoritarian government and so on. I mean, it's just, we were just, I was very impressed with how they are the same. So when you look into now and you, if you study history at all and these biographies of these people, then you start to see that it's happening all over again. We're going through the same thing. Technology may be a little bit different, but oftentimes it's not. We have this ABDIC 360 printing press that's made back in the 1950s. I think it's number serial number 500 and something. This sucker is old. We bought that in 94. You know, for a couple $1,000s and fix that sucker up and been using it ever since. And sometimes, you know, a nice little leaflet or flyer somewhere has the impact that you need it to. And it's what is the most protected. As they go on about, the airwaves, you know, you have FCC this, and you can and can't say that, and you got to have, you know, permission from the man to use some kind of transmission of electromagnetic radiation over for somebody to be able to know and hear and see, blah, 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 blah. You know, it gets pretty clear, freedom of the press, it's on a printed flipping page. You know, I got this flyer. Can I take my property, this flyer, and hand it to someone? Well, not here. Well, where's here? On the public sidewalk. Really? This is good information. We need to know this. There's one gentleman. His name's Keith McKinney here. He's been a very conservative Republican activist for a long time. And he's a real liberty guy. I'd say he's libertarian. But he goes to all the Republican meetings. If you're having a convention, if you're having a district meeting, if you're having any kind of gathering, the county conventions and such, if there's a few cars there, the boy's putting something on them. And they'll go, well, you can't do that. I'm like, you know, it's my property on their property. I mean, they may or may not like it, and he tries to make it more convenient by having stiff cards that goes between the felt on the window of the door and stuff so it's easier for them to get, or puts it in the mirror so they don't like, because I hate it on the windshield. Man, don't make me have to reach around up there, especially after I get in a car. Dang it. You know, put it in the mirror there and where I can just grab it, and that's good. Okay, fine. You know, chuck it. I'll live with it. But what happens is he has just been constantly disseminating this information at these conventions and stuff because he knows that they're a captive audience. They don't have anything else to do. They're just sitting there being ready to get some propaganda from the good side. From the good side. Well, we're going to go ahead and we'll get Jack back in when we come back on this. We'll have him call into the network and we'll get it going. But you want to hear this because it's a really good segment. We'll be right back here at FreedomsPhoenix.com studio and Declare Your Independence, me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the RBM Network from Freedom's Phoenix Studios. That's Freedom's with an S, Phoenix.com. Now, we have Jack on the line. We got you, Jack? Let's go ahead and pot Jack up. I got you?
Hello?
Yeah, there we go. Right on. All right, great. Now, what I want you to do, Jack, is, you know, I want you to start all over, okay?
Okay. All right, Ernie. My family is originally from Little Bolton, England, and my great-great-grandmother, Eliza Gregson, wrote a diary and explained what happened in her life. Now, in the 1820s, her family was very wealthy, and her father owned a cotton mill, and this was the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in England. One night, her father was gambling with some local nobles that he knew, and he lost. He lost big time. He lost the cotton mill. Now, Eliza and her sisters were sold into debt slavery, which is something that happened in the 19th century, and it looks like we're going to have it again shortly. Now, she worked 16 hours a day, 5 days a week, 10 hours on Saturday. They were fed what they called brimstone and treacle, which is a thin gruel, and it was a subsistence living. Eventually, her father was able to somehow put the money together to get them on the Underground Railroad and get them out of England illegally on a ship bound for, I think it was Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Now, eventually, they met the Gregsons, and they had known them in Little Bolton, England. They got married. They put together a covered wagon and made their way out to California in 1845, the second year of the California Trail. They were led by a mountain man named Elijah Greenwood. Now, they bought property in San Francisco, downtown San Francisco, at Kearny and Vallejo Streets. She made a small fortune washing the clothes of the 49ers. They were able to then buy 500 acres in Sonoma County, which was north of San Francisco. They had to clear out all the grizzly bears, And this was quite a process. They prospered, and eventually they passed away. The property went to my great-grandfather, John Nelson Gregson, and he did very well. And eventually the property went to my grandfather, John Wesley Gregson. And then the Depression hit, and my grandfather had the misfortune of taking out a mortgage on the property, which he owned outright, to buy more property. And he had eventually had over 1,000 acres in Sonoma County. The Depression hit. The tax note was called. He lost the property. He became, along with his wife and my father, sharecroppers on the farm that had been in the family for now several generations. And having had a great-great-grandmother that was sold into debt slavery, grandparents and a father who lived through being a sharecropper, seeing what it did to them personally, the scar it left on all of them, it made me very determined to let the American people know through Freedom's Phoenix, through the actions of Ernest Hancock, what is happening to us as Americans, how we are being sold into debt slavery. This year, in 2009, one out of every eight Americans is delinquent on their mortgage. There are 51 million Americans with a mortgage on a single-family home. They will have zero equity within 12 to 18 months. And none of this happened by accident. That is what puts a fire beneath me. That is why I work with you and have worked with you for almost 2 years. I am determined, I am driven, and nothing will stop me. Because I believe, as a Christian, I have to warn people what's coming, and that's what I've been trying to do.
Well, you've had, from your family, you know, there's been a experience in Southern California that's motivated you, and what actions did you take here recently?
Okay, in Southern California, you know, it was, I lived there the majority of my life. I mean, I lived there from 1953 until 1996, and I saw booms and busts in real estate. Back then, we didn't have the internet, really. You couldn't get the information that I am able to access now and provide people on Freedom's Phoenix on a daily basis. So when we had the downturn in 1989, I didn't see it coming. I didn't see one scintilla. I saw nothing to tell me that there was this massive downturn coming. I lived in Riverside County. We saw our housing prices crash. My parents lived in a place called Seal Beach, California, and it's a very, very stable neighborhood. To this day, there are no foreclosures where they lived for 36 years. So, you know, that area saw a housing price drop of 23% in a very affluent neighborhood.
And now, let's go ahead, Jack, let's go ahead and hold it. This is a really good place to stop because we're going into break. And when we come back, Jack's going to be telling us about, you know, it happened already. Now, a lot of the young people, they don't even remember this. Well, it's coming. We'll be right back. We'll get the details from Jack Gregson here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and at the FreedomsPhoenix.com studios, we want to make sure you are informed about the revolution that is nigh. It's not, you know, like kind of sort of maybe someday you're thinking about coming. It's been going on. Oh, where you been? Waiting on you now. Now, we're talking with Jack Gregson. He's an editor for Freedom's Phoenix, and he covers housing and the economy as his main focus. And he's telling us the story of his family and how, you know, you have diaries from great-grandmothers and great-great-grandmothers and such that have this information of a generation that shares this with you, and it goes on and on and on in a cycle. It goes round and round. Well, the resistance to us being fleeced on a regular basis is, that's why they call it revolution. It just keeps coming round and round along with the tyranny. So what we're going to do is pick up his story to where his family has roots in California from way back when, and now they are in California. It's the late 80s. Jack's starting to become a young man, invested in property, starting to live his life, and then all of a sudden, boom, he gets slapped upside the head. Tell us about that, Jack.
Well, my wife and I were married in 1989. Our oldest daughter was born in 1990. And at that point, we had the invasion of Iraq, Desert Storm. So there was a lot going on in the news. And we were struggling to, you know, pay our bills and struggling with a new child. And, you know, and just we were just normal parents. And we had a hell of a commute. We had to commute about 38 miles. My commute was actually 80 miles. And it was not a lifestyle that anybody would envy. But the thing is, we did it because we thought we were moving forward as a family. And we owned real estate. We owned a piece of property with about a 360-degree view out to the east. We were high up in the mountains. We thought things were improving. And this housing bust that hit in 89-90 was something that we had no idea was on the horizon. And it really hit us hard. We had a house down the street from us that turned into a crack house. And I, along with a couple neighbors, cleaned it up. We mowed the yard. We went inside and cleaned everything up. We cleaned up all the little dime bags. We cleaned up the toilets, which had been overturned to make a fire so that they could, you know, heat up their crack. The house had been urban mined. We had to disguise all of that. I had to work on a couple other houses in the neighborhood, so when we eventually did get our house on the market, we could sell it. Nobody's going to come up the street and look at our house at the top of the cul-de-sac if they look at a couple houses that look like they're crack houses. And so, I mean, we really worked hard to get the house sold. We did get it sold. And then we had to help my mother sell her house. She was elderly. She had been in the hospital for months. And so we had to struggle to get her house together in a very wealthy neighborhood. But it was what they call a teardown. We had to take it from a teardown to something that would sell very quickly. And it did, because we knew what we were doing, and we worked really hard to do it. But that was before the Internet, and we really weren't able to see what was on the horizon, what was happening in real time in the housing market and the economy. I read three newspapers a day. It didn't matter. I read Time and Newsweek. I read Business Week. I had no clue. There was nothing to tell me that this housing downturn was going to hit, how long it was going to last, how severe it was. And I decided, I don't want to go through that. I'm 55 now. And several years ago, when we were living in Ahwatukee, you know, I saw this coming again. LouRockwell.com is a great website. And I was able to read people like Doug French and a couple others, Bill Bonner, John Malden at SafeHaven.com. And I was starting to build up a knowledge of what was happening in the economy in real time in housing, because I could access the information. I could look at the raw data. I could look at the charts. I didn't have to go through the lamestream media to tell me what was happening. I could decide for myself. And I saw this wave of foreclosures coming. I knew it was coming in October 2004. And you and I talked about it. And, you know, hey, I'm 50. I don't want to go through that again. I don't want to clean up a crack house again. Who would? I've done it. I don't want to do it again. And so we fixed up the house, got it sold in May of 2006, moved on our merry way. We were told that we were insane, that the housing market would never correct. It would never correct to this degree. I had people that were neighbors that didn't want to talk to me because they literally thought I was insane. People at church wouldn't talk to me. You know, I could talk to you, Ernest, and I could talk to a couple others, but that was it. You were a lunatic if you saw this coming.
Well, on the radio, we were talking, because libertarian philosophy kind of gets past all the, you know, the way we like it to be in control and socially and economically engineering, using government to make it, blah, blah, blah. We're just, you know, that's where this objectivism thing comes in. It's like, you know, what is it? What it is, man, just tell me what it is. So what happened was, when we were doing radio back in 03, when I first started doing radio, we're like, hello, you know, this is what's happening. Everybody get ready. So we need to make sure that you, at the time, were part of the audience. And then we went moved on, and I worked with Charles Goyette, and he did a fantastic job in making sure people were aware. And we've had friends that were so grateful that a gentleman in Glendale, he sold his house, took all the money, bought precious metals and some firearms and lead and all kinds of stuff, but mostly bought precious metals, moved into an apartment with his young children, and waited. He goes, I know what's going to happen. Boom. The housing just took a dump. Now, here's a guy with some resources ready to go into the next phase. The problem is that now we're in a situation where the people that were smart enough to do that and have all this extra money, they can buy their house back for half what it was, but should they be even buying it now? Should they wait till it's a quarter what it was? You know, what was it that you did? I mean, I don't even really remember. I remember you sold your house. You know, when did you sell it?
May of 2006.
Ooh, ain't you smart.
Yeah, I saw the peak coming. In the summer of 2005, I started working like a maniac, painting the house, cleaning it up, getting everything done. It was a typical, you know, tract house. It was thrown up, you know, very quickly, and so it had defects. It had all the things you had to fix, and it just needed some care. It was over 10 years old. And so I fixed those things up. I saw the peak coming in August, July of 2005. And I got the house on the market March 1st of 2006. I told the realtor what was going to happen. And I told my neighbor, who was a mortgage broker, told him. You know, they thought I was insane.
Well, tell me about that conversation. I mean, you'd go to the, because I had a lot of them. I tell you one thing that we did. This is a good example. The Arizona Republic here had an article on how, oh, yeah, everything's fine, infrastructure's great, wonderful, we need. And you know, if you're getting your information from the lamestream media, then you're just part of the sheep ready to get sheared. Right? You know, that's what's happening. Oh, the stock market. Man, it's just exploding last couple of days, and it's because they can. I mean, it has nothing to do with nothing. Meredith Whitney, they used to be with Oppenheimer Group, and she started her own consulting firm, and she's been a really good source of information over the past couple of years. And she has, you know, I don't know why. There's no fundamentals. There's nothing to support this. It's phantom. It's going. You know, so I'm, you know, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, we had these conversations with people, and you'll say, we're going into the greatest depression in human history. And they'll go, no, we're not. Okay. Why? I got all this evidence. I got everything here to show you why. I mean, this avalanche, you know, why is it that you think that we're not? Well, America. You know, I'm flag waving. You know, we're America. Got the Eagle logo, America. Okay? You know, we have great infrastructure, America. You know, we have a heritage of, you know, free enterprise, ingenuity, American way, America. And I'm going, wow, man, there's some delusion going on here. So we would provide the facts and so on, and there were some people that took it seriously that actually had a little bit of motivation, such as you, went, did the research, and goes, oh, man, damn, Skippy, we need to get out of this. So when you sold your property, what did you do then? Where'd you go? How did you restructure your life?
Well, we rented a house for a year. And I tried to warn the Asian owners of the home. They were from Korea. They were really nice people. They were sweet. They were intellectuals, but they thought I was nuts. And I said, look, I can show you the charts. I can show you the raw data. I said, do you want to look at it? And she wouldn't look at it because she was the one that owned the house. And, you know, she told me she was going to sell it, so we'd have to move out. And I said, you're not going to be able to sell it. And I told her just, you know, straight out in March of 2007, you know, when she gave us 90 days notice we had to move out. She would never look at the numbers. She put well over $50,000 into the house. It never sold. It sat there. It's still sitting there. She's renting it out. She can't get rid of it. And now she's way underwater. So then, you know, I wanted my daughters to really tough it, to learn what it was to tough it. And I didn't want to baby them. I don't want my daughters to be weak. I don't want them to be, you know, like a typical teenage, you know, kids are nowadays. I want them to be independent. I want them to be intelligent. So what did I do? We lived in a week-to-week rental. It was called In-Town Suites, and it was in Ahwatukee. And you think, why would you do that? I wanted them to experience something beyond just suburban life. You know, I wanted them to experience it because I don't think that you can learn unless you have a variety of experiences. So we moved from that to living in an apartment. We've been in a really nice apartment for 2 years. It's very quiet, very stable. It's great. It's a luxury, you know, apartment. But we're just sitting here waiting. It affords me the opportunity to, you know, to donate all these hours to the people that are wise enough and open enough to read Freedom Scenics.
Well, I appreciate the plug, but I'm telling you one thing. How have you prepared yourself? I mean, simple things. You know, we know what's coming. You know, how many tons of food do you have? I mean, you know, what is? How are you going to survive this?
Okay, well, you know, I went to Home Depot over 2 years ago, about 2.5 years ago, and I started buying the gray storage tubs, and I started buying food. I took my daughters with me, and we would go out and start buying food, and we were very selective as to what we bought. We weren't stupid. We didn't waste our money, and we started storing it, and that was in the spring of 2007. And so, you know, we've gone through that food. We're upgrading it now. We're adding more because of what I see coming in the next, you know, 120 days. You know, yeah, we're buying food. We're buying organic seeds, seeds that are not genetically modified and made by Monsanto. I'm sorry. I don't trust them. You know, I want to buy things that God made. I trust God hands more than I trust Monsanto. That's the bottom line. So we have been, you know, going back to the earth. And even though we live in an apartment, we have a really nice patio, and we've got an area where we've got plants and pots. So we've got tomatoes. We've got squashes. We've got blueberries. We've got boysenberries. And we also have about 8 varieties of peppers, so we can make really wonderful salads. We're experimenting. And I'm making a solar oven and just doing everything I can, buying firearms, upgrading the car, getting the car ready, getting rid of everything we don't need, just getting ready.
Are you looking to move outside of the city, or are you going to urban commando it and survive here? What's your plan there?
You know, I don't really want to say.
You don't have to.
I don't want to say. I mean, I think that's up to every individual and where you live and, you know, how committed you've been to this revolution. If you're committed like I am and made, you know, contributions like I have, you know, I feel more vulnerable. But the thing is, I've done it because I wanted to warn people.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember. Okay, I won't reveal too much, but I'll tell this story. I first became aware of Jack when he called in to some of the radio shows that we have done, kind of motivated to ask some questions of relatives that he has that are in, you know, the energy industry. And some things got said on the phone and information and some guys that are high up. And all of a sudden, there's Black Lincoln Navigators parked out front, you know, say hello. And we're, wow, really? So we have a friend of mine is a postal carrier, and he's able to travel around, and he delivered in that area. So he would go around just to check on them. Sure enough, there they are, take pictures, hello. And we put stories out and everything, and all of a sudden they finally went away. But, you know, this is, you know, a lot of the people, you don't realize, there, you know, there's a reason for Jack to be concerned. You know, they don't want you knowing certain things. Sure as heck don't want you sharing them with everybody else. And that's one thing that happens. You'll see in the tax truth movement, you know, they don't care if you're out there and you're just following all the little rules and you're giving them a hard time and you're not paying your taxes. That's one thing. You know, but when you start showing other people how to do it, when you start sharing this information, when you start becoming a source of a viral infection of the people and letting people know what's going on, oh, you're not allowed. No. You're a bad guy then. So what we're in right now is a time to where speaking the truth to power, to a tyrannical government, that is treason in and of itself. Truth challenges the status quo. What does that tell you about the status quo? Bad. When we come back, we'll wrap up a little bit with Jack, and then we'll ask if he can stay on a little bit, because when we come into the next hour, we have a couple of guys in here, Rockstar 4409. You know, he's going to be talking about the videos that he's doing. He's doing one now. And we got Gwen. Gwen was part of a big action when Obama-nator came. You know, he came to ASU to do the commencement speech there, and we had plenty of notice he was coming, so we had some fun with it. Got national attention on that one. She'll tell you a little bit about that. We're engaged here. You know, we're ready to take on the man. And we've supplied resources that not only that we use, we created all this infrastructure and communication skills and plugging in to the freedom link so that you could too. It's really not that hard. We made it easy for you here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and freedomsphoenix.com. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Hey, you're back on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the FreedomsPhoenix.com studios. And that's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. Spell that out, Phoenix, Phoenix. Now, what we're going to do is I want to introduce you real quick to a couple of rock stars here. And then we'll, in the next hour, we'll bring in Pal Gamble, the senior editor, and we'll talk about, you know, how the site works and how we integrate with these guys and their activities. And it's just, we have this beautiful tapestry of action, and it's such an inspiration to this generation next, you know, that's coming up around the country. And it interweaves with a bunch of the stuff that they're doing. And even though they're across the country, even across the world, you can see the commonality of perspective from this next generation and how they overlap. They share different graphics. They share video clips. They share to free minds. You know, it's not a lot of people. We got to get in there. We got to go save the Republican Party. And they're like, where's our mallet and wooden stake? You know, I mean, you know, why are we worried about that? I mean, seriously, do you really think it's like let's save the Titanic? And they don't even worry about the people. You know, can we save some people? Let's try that. You start with their minds. Well, the first one, and Jack, I still got you there. You know, Jack, I want you to go ahead and hold over into the next hour. Would you please? And because you provide a perspective, Jack has had such an impact on my children. You know, I send them Jack's research, and you know they're ready to go buy it. Oh yeah, no, it's half price, or Dad, you know, we're gonna go buy it. And I'm just saying, yeah, you know, I just send them Jack's stuff. They go, yeah, maybe we changed our mind. And I'm like, thank you, Jack. And let's go ahead. 4409, Shelton, say hi, man.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Hey, you know, tell us just real quick. I'm going to get to Gwen real fast, then we'll get more detailed in the next hour. But just tell us, where the heck did you come from?
Originally from Kansas City, but some people think I've came from Area 51.
So here in the Valley, though, 4409 was born, all these videos and stuff that you did. What motivated you to do this stuff? When did you start?
Actually, I kind of got the movement from Freedom's Phoenix or Ernest Hancock. And I went to a meetup, and discovered Ron Paul and blah, 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 and then met you and just kind of like
took you know, one thing that he does that, you know, we'll get in more details, I'll tell you this. He just uses Microsoft Movie Maker or something, right?
Yeah, it's nothing sophisticated.
You know, but it's just amazing what he's able to do. You go to YouTube and just type in 4409, and that's a secret what that means. But, you know, you go, well, we all know.
It's
but you go 4409, you see the videos? Wow. You'll go, this is what Fox got to deal with, creativity of the young. Now let's go to Gwen. Gwen, introduce yourself and tell us about you and your husband and what brought you in. You got just like a minute.
Okay, my name is Gwen. My husband, Andrew, and I, we've been married about 4 years. Andrew just kind of playing around the computer one day and went to a couple websites and found out about NAFTA, and that led him into watching Freedom to Fascism, and he saw that clip of Ron Paul on there. And so when Ron Paul, you know, announced that he was running for president back in late 07, Andrew, you know, recognized that and thought, you know, wow, he's really great. I'm going to keep following this guy. And, you know, let us into the Ron Paul meetups. And we went to a Freedom kind of fest or whatever. And then a couple months later, we met Ernie and kind of just gotten bigger and bigger. We've been hanging out here a lot. So,
well, you know what they have? It's called Operation ASU. Well, they call it something else, but you know, Operation ASU, and when Obama came, they produced over 17,000 copies of the movie From Freedom to Fascism, double feature, along with the Obama deception. And we gave it to the students weeks before he even came. So they were already infected before we even got there. You know, it was the day that Obama came, we're like, hey, man, we're just having fun drinking beer and stuff. You know, we already did our bit. Well, we'll tell you about that when we come back here with bringing Pal Gamble, senior editor, and Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.